Lecture 7, The Roman Empire and Han China.
This session talks about the comparison between the Roman Empire and the Empire of the Han Dynasty in China. The purpose is severalfold. First of all, quite simply, it's a terrific comparative opportunity. As I'll illustrate further in just a moment, these two societies, for a several century span, were remarkably similar in some basic achievements, and that gives us an opportunity to look more closely at how classical societies operated, how classical politics could operate, in a context in which you're comparing apples with apples for the most part. Second purpose, related to this, obviously, is to use a slightly more leisurely, focused comparison to get a better sense of what classical governments could do. The focus this time is not just on politics, but the government aspect will be central. Final focus is to make it clear, in the case that it's still necessary, that a world history approach to the classical period needs to be very certain that our interest in Greece and Rome, in this case Rome, is properly balanced by an understanding of the important things occurring in other parts of the world. This lecture does not depend on a sense that Rome was somehow inferior to Han China. It was slightly different. But it does insist that the world of the classical period was not one in which Rome just sat there with a few isolated societies on the boundaries. I recently heard that reasserted, that Rome controlled the whole world. Well, it didn't. We shouldn't think so, and it's a distortion of world history even to pretend that that was the case. It won't surprise you at this point to know that this comparison will be a little bit, to take the terms of one of the societies we're looking at, a little bit yin and yang. We'll be talking about a lot of really interesting similarities and overlaps, but I want to focus particularly in the second part of the exercise in some revealing differences or shadings as well. Not surprisingly, the end result is two societies remarkably alike, but not exactly alike, and the differences may have counted not just at the time, but subsequently as well. One final preliminary. The focus is on two empires. We don't want to forget that these empires did not exist through the whole classical period, and we don't want to forget that there were other significant classical societies as well. The similarities between the Roman Empire and the Han Empire remind us that the Indian experience was on the whole rather different. There were imperial periods, they shouldn't be forgotten, but the core of Indian history in the classical period rests on cultural developments, on social systems, to some extent on trade outreach, not nearly so clearly on political achievement. We could also work in the Persian Empire, which was a major political achievement for several centuries, and that would be a perfectly valid comparison, simply not exercised here because it's in a somewhat different chronological slot, and again, simply for reasons of feasibility. All right. Similarities, first off. Classical Rome began its empire in 27 BCE, and the empire in the West definitively collapsed in 476. The Han Dynasty lasted from 202 BCE to 220 CE. So the Han Dynasty lasted for 418 years, the Roman Empire for 503. Remarkably similar. I don't know that it means too much, but it's an interesting start. As you know already, these two empires developed very similar territorial expansions. Rome's was more geographically dispersed because the Mediterranean sat in the middle. Han China was a landmass and therefore more compact, but the actual land territory controlled was remarkably similar, so that just as people refer to the Pax Romana in the Mediterranean world, the Roman peace, so one can refer to the Chinese peace, Pax Sinaica, in the Asian world under Han control. Both involve considerable masses of territory ruled on the whole in orderly fashion for a considerable period of time. As has been mentioned before also, the population levels of the two cases remarkably similar. Both had over 50 million people. Han China a little larger, but, you know, what's a couple million people among friends? Very similar operation in this regard. Both clearly had emphasized territorial expansion. Both prior to the advent of these particular regimes, Republican Rome had begun the expansionist process for Rome, which the empire simply took over and furthered. Earlier dynasties in China had also set the stage for the Han conquests in somewhat similar fashion. With expansion came, and we've discussed this before, came somewhat similar needs for integration. Both empires, again continuing work by predecessors, both empires worked hard on economic integration. The Han continued the policy of building road systems and canal systems so that the different major parts of the empire could be linked, allowing specialization in trade among the major regions. Rome, again continuing policies that had developed earlier in the Mediterranean, worked very hard on developing granaries in appropriate parts of the empire in Sicily and North Africa and elsewhere that it could then reach through Mediterranean trade routes with goods that would come from other portions of the empire, including Rome itself. Economic integration, the regulation and encouragement of merchant activity was fundamental to the prosperity, including the tax base, of both of these important political systems. Both systems worked on political integration directly. Slightly different mechanisms, but directly. In the case of Han China, several devices combined to try to produce a coherent political structure capable of ruling an empire that was so large that it could take over a month to reach the frontiers from the capital city, even with the fairly efficient road system that the emperors built. Efforts at political integration included, obviously, ideological promotion. The Han dynasty attempted to further Confucian thought as the means of inculcating values in the elite and possibly beyond that would emphasize loyalty, deference, devotion to the state, attachment to political order as represented by the Han emperors themselves. The emperors continued a tradition, along with Confucian values, of emphasizing their divine majesty, or at least semi-divine majesty. The concept of Son of Heaven was one that had been inherited and was still used sort of as a supplement to Confucian teachings, and there was no inherent contradiction involved. The emperors surrounded themselves also with great pomp and ceremony, constructing cultural monuments, military processions, parades, various activities that would demonstrate, at least to the urban populations, their splendor and their remoteness. And finally, and most crucial to the political cement developed by the Han introduced the first clearly established system of Chinese bureaucracy in which the central government would designate a significant number of people as governmental representatives in the provinces, representing the interests of the central government, receiving communications and sending information from and sending communications to the central government. The bureaucratic system was furthered by an emphasis on Confucian education and training in the literary classics, by the beginnings of an examination system that would, in principle at least, select bureaucrats on the basis of demonstrated merit. This bureaucratic system provided a network of political activities, political control that helped bring this vast territory together in effective fashion. Again, Rome's methods were not exactly the same. The Romans did not have quite the same cultural apparatus as Confucianism provided, although lots of writers, particularly early in the empire, were eager to sing the praises of the emperors and the imperial system. So there was a sort of cultural panegyric developed early on that would help bring loyalty and attention to the new regime. A bureaucracy was developed, But it's obviously important to note that the Roman bureaucracy was somewhat more rudimentary than the Chinese, and the Romans placed more emphasis on the legal system and on the rule of law across the empire, at least as applied to Roman citizens. And this emphasis on common legal principles, codified into really admirable statements of legal reality, this provided something of the same cement that the more abundant Chinese bureaucracy provided in that case. Rome, for the most part, did not emphasize the divinity of the emperors themselves, although patronage by the gods was part of the process, and imperial participation in religious ceremonies part of the process as well. But the Romans certainly at least equaled, probably surpassed, the Han in imperial monuments, in processions through the city of Rome itself and elsewhere after military triumphs. The emphasis on the majesty, power of the imperial office was, if slightly differently expressed, clearly as great in Rome as in Han China. Both systems, again, probably differences in degree, but both systems also expanded the functions of government itself. I've mentioned in a previous comment the role of the Chinese government in patronizing a certain amount of scientific and technological research. This probably did not occur in Rome, but both governments, quite understandably, used their considerable powers of bureaucracy and taxation to pay a great deal of specific attention to the provisioning of major cities, in the case of Rome, particularly Rome, so that regulations and encouragement would help organize convoys of grain, would help set prices, would help regulate supply. The system didn't always work perfectly well, but on the whole, both governments were actively engaged in at least a certain level of economic activity designed in assuring the economic essentials of a stable social and political order. The Roman government was probably, in its imperial heyday, a bit more involved than its Chinese counterpart in sponsoring cultural activities for ordinary people. But again, the similarities in broad outline quite marked. So you have two systems, about the same size, about the same lifespan, strong emphasis on political functions, political systems, bureaucracy and/or law, and political symbolism, combined with the active encouragement of economic integration in ways that would make the system work. Differences, although differences within a context of still remarkable similarities. On the whole, and this has been suggested in an earlier comment, on the whole, I think it's fair to say that the Chinese regime, again, building on prior precedent, worked harder at integrating its vast territory than the Romans did. The Chinese planted larger colonies of people in frontier regions. It's absolutely vital to remember, as against our current impressions, that even the Middle Kingdom in China in the classical period was the scene of major ethnic mixing and ethnic division, to use a modern term, particularly in South China. The regime tackled this head-on by planting large colonies of northern Chinese in the south, as well as, of course, by encouraging the common use of Mandarin, at least at the elite and bureaucratic level. Some of these policies, by the way, are still being conducted in frontier regions by the Chinese regime today, so the continuity aspect is interesting as well as we look at efforts to integrate the western provinces and Tibet in contemporary China. Rome planted colonies also, colonies of soldiers, but colonies that could begin to develop a Roman lifestyle and Roman monuments in provinces as remote as England. But on the whole, these were smaller colonies. They didn't do as much, they weren't intended to do as much work by way of population integration, and they probably didn't accomplish much in this vein either. The Romans certainly encouraged the use of Latin by the upper class, although it never managed to erase predominance of Greek in upper-class circles in the eastern Mediterranean. The Romans certainly emphasized the expansion of Roman citizenship. Citizenship initially was confined to Romans themselves, then during the Republic was expanded as a possibility to certain people in other parts of Italy, and then under the Empire could expand to people who were not even remotely Italian. St. Paul, the great Christian saint, was extremely proud of the fact that he was a Roman citizen. So this was an integrating device, perhaps not totally dissimilar to spreading bureaucrats and language in Han China, but it didn't affect as many people. And the fact remains that Rome was content, not counterproductively in the period itself, Rome was content with a looser regime over most of its provinces, a reliance on considerable local autonomy, even existing kings where they were willing to follow Roman rules and provide loyalty and tribute. Whereas the Chinese were more ruthless integrators in ways that may have helped produce a somewhat different subsequent history in the two societies. Both regimes conscious of integration for obvious reasons, but both involved in somewhat different specific procedures and specific results. Second interesting difference, although again within a somewhat similar context, involves policies of expansion. Obviously, both the Roman Empire and Han China expanded a great deal, and this territorial expansion was one of the keys to their similarity, one of the keys to their needs to provide integrating devices, etc. But Han China was capable of surviving a cessation of expansion and was willing to operate in terms of more diplomatic interaction with borderline territories than the Romans proved interested in doing. So the Han Chinese obviously pushed the boundaries of empire out well beyond the Middle Kingdom, no question about this. But when they felt they had reached a sustainable term, they did not necessarily feel that they had therefore to compensate in some fashion for the cessation of expansion. Rather, they adopted a system of looking at potential neighbors like Vietnam and Korea in terms of payments of tribute rather than as candidates for further expansion. Rome's appetites in this regard seem to have been less clearly bounded, and I think there are a couple reasons for this. Arguably, although this certainly could be debated, the Mediterranean value system, not only Roman but Greek before, was quite simply more militaristic than the Chinese. Both societies depended on elaborate military commitments and devotion. I don't mean to oversimplify, but the importance of military valor probably played a greater role in the Roman definition of upper-class achievements compared to the greater Chinese emphasis on education and gentility, along potentially with military service. More practically and obviously still, the Romans, once the empire started particularly, the Romans needed additional territory as a means of rewarding generals and soldiers. They didn't have as clear a bureaucratic system in which successful generals could be rewarded without the addition of specific territories. And most obviously still, the Romans needed expansion in order to provide a continuing supply of slaves to a labor system where, in many agricultural estates and in the mines, as well as in domestic service, slaves were simply vital for production expansion, for successful operation of the economy. There were slaves in Han China. They were mostly domestic servants. They were relatively few in number. The economic system did not depend on additional slave supply, and in this sense, too, expansion could be halted without immediate consequence. Thus, now it's important to recognize both empires would decline. As we've already indicated, both declined after about the same period of time, so I don't want to overdo the Han advantage. But Rome more clearly began to suffer after the point, which was reached in 180 CE, after the point at which expansion became impossible and even a retreat began to be introduced. The system just didn't work as well in terms of supplying labor, supplying reward, supplying opportunities for the military itself to feed on victory rather than feed on domestic discontent and disruption of imperial selection and the imperial process itself. So, integration, a little bit different. expansion, perhaps even more different, interesting contrasts, again, within a remarkably similar context. Culture. Han China was, I think, unquestionably more culturally creative than Rome. Rome had its moments. Its literature, certainly its art and architecture, are splendid, but Roman cultural achievements tended to be more derivative from earlier Greek experience. This was a pattern that was established earlier in the Republic and on the whole continued in the Empire. And it's less easy, with, again, some artistic and literary exceptions, it's less easy to point to basic Roman creativity in philosophic or scientific endeavor. Huge exception here once Christianity came in the later stages of empire, when Roman intellectuals, broadly construed, operated at extremely high levels. So again, we don't want to oversimplify. But the culture of Rome itself, the culture that the empire would itself emphasize, at least until the imperial conversion to Christianity, the culture was less robust, less creative, more derivative. It is perhaps worth reminding here that some historians have compared Rome's cultural position here to that of the United States, a very powerful society, strong in many respects, including military, but possessed of a cultural apparatus that was to some extent derivative from an earlier point of origin, Greek in the case of classical Rome, Western European in the case of the United States. Whether the analogy is useful or not, it's at least sort of fun to kick around. All right. Classical China was also, and we've discussed this before, more creative in the area of technologies, particularly production technologies. Classical China created, and this was prior to the Han Dynasty itself, but was something the dynasty was able actively to utilize. Classical China created basic philosophical and religious systems in a way that, with the obvious exception of Christianity, which was sort of a late adoption on the part of the Roman Empire did not. How much does this matter? How much does this matter? How much did the ongoing creativity of Confucian and other intellectuals in Han China contribute to a measurably different result than in classical Rome? One point, however, returns us to similarity. Neither Han China nor classical Rome developed or sustained cultural systems on their own that satisfied what one might argue were the spiritual needs of important segments of the population. The Han Dynasty's emphasis on Confucianism, Taoism persisted, but the emphasis was on Confucianism. Classical Rome's emphasis on civic religion, the religion of the gods and goddesses, these emphases were interesting. They could help call attention to rituals and themes that would bring loyalty to the imperial system itself, but neither system was itself intensely spiritual. And both regimes in their later stages, and here's an interesting similarity, both regimes ended up seeing the importation of spiritual values from outside, or at least partially outside, the main imperial centers. In the case of Han China, Buddhism began to draw interest in the later stages of the dynasty and then would surge forward still further after the dynasty collapsed. In the case of classical Rome, the story is more familiar. Increasing numbers of Romans converted to Christianity by the 4th century, probably about 10% of the imperial population was Christian. And then in a hope to seize on a new method of winning popular loyalty and support, the imperial system itself embraced Christianity under Emperor Constantine, and the association of the final phases of the empire and Christianity became increasingly intertwined. Interesting development in both cases. Despite the differences in cultural creativity, both systems seemed to have something lacking that invited additional cultural innovation, additional cultural importation, at least when things began to turn a bit bad. Both systems encouraged active military activity. The Roman system was particularly famous, and again, this was not a development that began with the empire, but was furthered by it. The Roman system depended on tight military discipline and the careful organization of infantry in the Roman legion. These legions were extremely effective. They were given substantial privilege. They developed tight bonds of comradeship, and they operated, obviously, very effectively through much of the early history of the empire. Chinese military was probably best known, at least in retrospect, not for its tactics, although these have to have been quite successful in many instances, but for its larger approach to military philosophy. So it's from the Han Dynasty that we get The Art of War by Sun Tzu, one of the great works on military thinking generated by any society anywhere, still utilized in military training in the present day. And one wonders here, and this is real speculation, one wonders here if there's an interesting contrast that would again go back to some of the other distinctions between the two systems. Rome was known for military force, military organization, excellent weaponry, and obviously for many centuries, great success. China was known for these things to a degree, but also for a level of thinking about the place of military activity in the larger political and social picture. So Sun Tzu was just as interested, perhaps even more interested, in writing about the limitations of the use of war, about writing about how war was a last resort and various other devices should be utilized in preference. And one wonders if, possibly in association with the different needs for imperial expansion, there's a distinction here that's worth remembering. The two empires obviously had different origins. The Han Dynasty sprung more directly from prior dynastic activity in classical China. It operated in a context in which a period of disorder under the Zhou Dynasty had been replaced by cultural Confucian as well as political emphasis on the importance of political order. The origins of the Roman Empire were a little bit more oblique. Obviously, the process of territorial expansion predated the advent of empire, but Rome's origins had more to do with, in politics, had more to do with the control of aristocratic landlords, the importance of a certain democratic element in Roman politics, and these were, on the whole, overridden by the institutions of the empire. To some extent, possibly, there's some difference in the smoothness of the advent of these two systems that would be worth attention as well. Most obviously, however, and this is the clear concluding point, and we will return to it two sessions hence, most obviously, the fates of the two empires continued the theme of a surprising amount of coincidence with an important level of difference. Both empires began to fade as the quality of individual emperors began to yield, as invasions from Central Asia or indirectly prodded by Central Asian migrations began to press into the territories of the empires themselves. Both empires suffered from increasing economic stagnation, which complicated not only material life, but also the taxation base of the empire. Both empires seem to have suffered from considerable inroads of disease that reduced population levels overall. So both empires, although at slightly different time periods, would fall victim to a somewhat similar process of decay and ultimate disappearance, at least in portions of its holdings. But in the case of the Roman Empire, at least in its Western stronghold, in the case of the Roman Empire, the empire, once it fell, was gone, never to be revived as a whole. It would be remembered. It would be remembered with reverence. It would be selectively borrowed from by later regimes, but it was never reconstituted. The fate of the Han Dynasty was different. It, too, was destroyed. The Han never returned. But the key institutions and achievements of the Han Dynasty were revived by later regimes. So there's an interesting final difference between the two stories, a story of remembrance and selective utilization versus a story of revival because, among other things, It's been argued, the Chinese really, when they got their act back together following a period of disarray, the Chinese really couldn't think of a system that would do better than the Han had done. They could work to perfect it, and they did introduce some further changes, but they did not need to see its replacement because it really just needed to be restored. And Rome never quite achieved that final luster.